This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you. Now, here's Brent and Dave from the Capital Auto Group Studios, exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Welcome to Newsmakers, folks. This is Brent DeHart. I'm here with Dave Bourne, and it is Monday. We are here to talk about things happening in the Mid-Willamette Valley and get your take on things, too. We had a couple of nice shows last week with callers coming in and weighing in on the issues that we were discussing. And your, as always, your calls are welcome at 503-393-1430. 393-1430. I want to start at the top of the hour. By the way, Dave, happy Monday. Hope you had a great weekend.
I did have a fantastic
and
weekend.
It's
you?
A gorgeous day to live in the Mid-Willamette Valley.
Can't believe we're inside.
As long as you don't have allergies, right? That was like almost sidetracked me for two full days last week.
That's amazing how that does that.
Somehow worthwhile. And these allergies, by the way, folks, if you're out there suffering, you know, they can hit you, or if you're not suffering, they can hit you at any point in your life. Like, you could, like, never have allergies, and suddenly you do.
I've been sneezing a lot more lately.
Yeah.
I think it's coming.
A little bit of hay fever, and then it can just turn into, I can't live here anymore, which was the case.
Could it possibly just stop and go away again?
I don't know. That's a very good question.
If it starts suddenly, can it stop suddenly?
You would think.
And that would
never
be nice.
Seems to go the other way.
I know. No.
For a while there, for several years, while my father was living in the Mid-Valley, he had to go to the coast or go on vacation in certain parts of the spring, late spring, early summer.
Oh, wow.
He could not be in the valley.
That's interesting.
Very, very bad.
Okay.
All right. Some things to talk about with the passing of Senator Winters, which still saddens me. I hate to even say the words out loud. Last Wednesday, we lost Senator Winters. The question is already being talked about. What happens to her seat? What happens to her Senate seat? Held by a Republican minority. I want to talk about that really quickly. I want to talk a little bit about sending your kids off to college as well during this hour. What that's going to cost, what student debt is, what some of these presidential hopefuls are talking about student debt, which... And OSU, and what it costs, what you think it might cost, and how much you would have to borrow. So we'll get into that and a couple other things in the news today. But let's start with Senator Winters. You know, a lot of times people pass away. They could be movie stars. They could be politicians. They could be public figures, and they get lionized in the press, and they pass, and everybody, friends and foes alike, heaps praise upon them and this and that, and sometimes it just seems... Oh, everybody needs to tweet this and blah, blah, blah. And you wonder how much of it is really heartfelt and how much of it is just PR and how much is obligatory. Never obligatory when it comes to Senator Winters.
No.
She was amazing. I think the next time that we need a show to be rerun, let's rerun the show that she came in on Newsmakers.
Absolutely.
So
that was awesome.
Peter Courtney had some really poignant words. I saw him in the news as well talking. And, you know, they're on opposite sides of the aisle, but two long-standing kind of partners running that Senate. And just what she brought to Oregon and the legislature was unbelievable. go back to, I think her first job was in the governor's office in the ombudsperson office. So she
the
was
what?
Ombudsperson. It's kind of an antiquated word, but this still exists. And that's a role for somebody to advocate on behalf of. And so if you had a complaint about the government, and
we
you
all
wanted,
do.
You wanted to somebody to step in, and you wanted, so she, that the governor had an ombudsperson office. And sometimes you see them in universities as well. But throughout all of that and her raising of her kids and her longstanding marriage, she was a widow. Don't remember which year her husband passed away, but and she owned restaurants and she had the knowledge of what it would take to build something from scratch, like ribs with great sauce. She could build those from scratch. She was even here when she was here earlier this year. She said, I still know how to tie on a bib. You know, she would do that for her customers, tie on that bib so you wouldn't get all messy eating Jackie's ribs.
Yeah.
And just the service and the number of things that she was involved with for so many decades. Really sad to see her pass. Now the reality of the political situation where the Republicans are already a minority and they don't have another vote. And we still have a month left, virtually a month left of this legislative session. So I wanted everybody to have at least some idea what's going to happen to that Senate seat. Because she just got reelected.
Right.
We talked about that on the show. She just got reelected in November. So there's multiple years left. It's not like her term is anywhere near expiring. So an appointment will be made to fill her seat for the remainder of the term. And we'll check with some of our politicos out there. Make sure we get this right. Because in some situations, an appointment will trigger a special election. So I don't know if it's going to be the full, you know, almost 4 years of her term, or is it going to be until there's a called special election. But either way, there's a big chunk of service to be done, not only immediately, but of course they'll go back into short session next February, which is just not that far away. So what happens is a Republican, of course, has to be nominated to fill the seat. So you need to have been a Republican in case you want to be a senator, folks. You need to have been a Republican, I think, for at least 6 months. And then the, in this situation, because her Senate district spans two counties, Marion and Polk County, both sets of county commissioners will be in on appointing a replacement. There will be a gathering of the Marion County Republican Party and the leadership there and the Polk County Republican Party to produce a short list of names to be considered.
Who did, do you have one?
Do I have a short list?
Do you have a short list of people that might come up for that?
Oh, I've heard some things over the years that there's going to be some people who are interested. Certainly. Some community leaders, some...
but you personally, do you know somebody that might?
I just might know that, but I not at liberty to say.
Oh, sure. Okay. Yeah,
not at liberty to say. No comment. Until we are at liberty to say it. Hopefully those people who are seeking the seat will talk to us and explain why and what they're going to bring to the table.
Okay.
And how they're going to serve and whether or not they're going to serve an interim and serve and run. And that's always the biggest question. So we're going to appoint like we did with the Secretary of State, where the governor said, I'm going to appoint somebody who doesn't plan to run. Which I don't have. I was going to say I have mixed feelings about that. I don't have mixed feelings. I think it's just wrong. You just can't tell somebody, I'm going to put you in this role, but you're going to promise, because you can't hold them to it.
No.
So you can't, you know, they could get in there and tell the governor she was going to, but then say, well, I've changed my mind and I'm going to run.
I am going to run.
Yeah.
I like this job. I want to run again.
But given how much of the term is left, I would imagine the community will seek somebody who will be there for a while, that wants to take the seat and will want to run again.
Sure, that makes sense.
So in Oregon, your Senate district spans two representative districts, so there might be a representative who wants to run for that seat.
Right? Okay, yeah. Well, isn't that how Jackie started?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yep, she was a representative.
She was a representative, then went to the Senate?
So the Marion County Republicans, Polk County Republicans, they make a short list. Back when it was just one county, it was typically three individuals, right? That goes to the county commissioners, and the county commissioners deliberate and pick somebody and gets appointed. And that's how that works. So it will be a Republican. It will be from either Marion or Polk County, somebody who lives in the district. And Brent's speculation would be that it'll be somebody that the Republicans would like to have in the seat moving forward.
That only makes sense.
Now and into the next election and so forth.
That only makes sense. So my name will not be on
that
list.
You're not going to put that at no. Okay, mine either.
Yeah.
So
it takes a special person to be in the Senate and be a representative. I'm just not, I don't think I'm patient enough.
I was going to say diplomatic.
Not diplomatic enough. And politics just bends me the wrong way.
We've already established that Brent would be an outstanding governor, of course. Governor Brent.
As governor, yes.
But
representative, I don't think you could do it.
I would. Did you have to say that for me?
Yes.
I don't think I would be a good representative either. because I don't have the patience. And I applaud those. I mean, we had Denise Bowles in here.
Yeah.
Representative Bowles, and it's her first full term after being elected and so forth. And I just, to be fighting every day as a minority legislator and super minority legislator,
right,
and really just trying to shoot down bad ideas, mm-hmm, and seeing good ideas not go anywhere because it's the wrong party.
Frustrating.
Yeah, that would be. And we saw Kevin Cameron, and Kevin served us well in the legislature. And I think ultimately he got tired of, you know, you're always losing, you're always going to lose and so forth. But he did some great work there before he ran and successfully became our county commissioner in, mm-hmm, Marion County. All right, that's some politics to start your Monday. Yeah, let's come back and we'll talk some money, some college, and other things on the agenda. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne, and you are listening to Newsmakers on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Green Acres Landscape.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart with Dave Bourne. Thanks for joining us on this beautiful Monday here on Newsmakers
again,
for your lunch hour.
Why are we inside? We should do it out on the
outdoor
deck.
Outdoor remotes. Hey, there's an article in Statesman Journal today.
Yes.
And by the way, we're going to have to do a segment or an entire show on local media. We, of course, you know, you're listening to Newsmakers. You're listening to local radio. You're listening to primarily conservative talk,
yeah,
right?
We're local media, though.
So, but just local media. And our print media, of course, we have Salem Business Journal,
mm-hmm,
the Statesman Journal, Salem Reporter, which is online only. And they're totally different. In Statesman Journal, of course, being from Gannett, it's really changed, actually, dramatically over the last 5 years as budgets and operations for local newspapers change. So, I'd be interested to know how many people are reading the news, how many people get it delivered, or if they're reading it online, and how much they value it. So I'm an information junkie, so I like to have multiple sources of information, and I like to credit them when we're talking about them here on Newsmakers. And I do think that the Salem Reporter has made the Statesman Journal more accountable and a better newspaper.
Mm-hmm.
So
I agree.
Competition is good.
Yeah.
Anyway, there's an article in the Statesman Journal today, and we like to talk about infrastructure here at Newsmakers, and this is all about, hey, what is ODOT planning for the next decade, and how much is it going to cost, and is it going to be enough?
That's a daunting task.
Yeah. And they have, you know, that issue is, of course, they have gasoline tax increases slated to come in that was passed in previous sessions, and they're moving it in step by step over the several years.
Well, thank God, because that would be overwhelming, wouldn't it?
And of course, yeah. And of course, you have to slate these things. You have to engineer them, and you have to slate them for construction because they can only do so much
right,
in each, you know, construction season, otherwise known for the rest of us as summer.
That's true. They're paving 10 miles of I-5.
Yeah.
Between here.
All the more reason not to commute, right?
Between here and Woodburn, yeah. But I was on one of those lanes yesterday. Ooh, there's nothing better than fresh asphalt.
All right, so 2017, just 2 years ago, Oregon legislature did a big transportation package planned for $5.3 billion to be spent over the next decade. That's another thing. Speaking of over the next decade, you got to watch how people, and it's happening on the national front as well, where they're saying this will cost blank over the next decade. And so they make it want to sound like an extraordinarily huge number,
mm-hmm,
right? Because they say over the next decade, it'll cost that. I'm like, well, Obama won't be president over the next decade. Trump won't be able to, you know, it's like things change. But anyway,
right,
$5.3 billion over the next decade. So $500 million a year, right? And half a billion.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway.
That doesn't sound any cheaper.
No. Nope. So they've got 15 projects under construction, although it'll feel like more than that. They've got 80 projects in planning. And they're going to have to schedule these all in and prioritize. I mean, if you think there's not politics in that, there's politics in that.
Yeah, right. My street needs to be done next. Come on.
Repaving. Yeah, repaving I-5 from Salem to Woodburn.
Yeah, that's a big one.
Yeah, and bridges are the big one.
Yeah.
What is the safety of the bridges? It's not just the safety of us as we travel them, but it's also what could come as a screeching halt if there's a bridge failure. Or if the bridge becomes so compromised that they close it down and you have to reroute traffic of goods and services. And I think people underestimate how many goods and services are traveling.
Right.
Getting everything to where it needs to be, not just us to our event or us to
Never
work.
Been stopped in traffic on I-5 or even on Highway 22
or something
like that?
I lived in L.A. for a while.
It's amazing how many trucks are stuck in that backup. And you're like, hey, there's a lot of goods and services traveling on this road.
So the ODOT, and you know, ODOT over the years has had its share of detractors, right? One of the one of my friends used to famously always say, ODOT's the government agency, the state agency that has 5,000 employees and they don't build any roads.
Wow.
Right? They're like, what do they do with all those employees? Maintain them, for one. But at any rate, so they're projects for upgrading and replacing bridges, fortifying the highways for seismic, you know, so you don't have a big gulf of gaps of earth, presumably.
Right.
And enhancing interchanges to reduce congestion. What I did not see, Dave, is increasing the lanes.
Yeah. Right? That's kind of worrisome.
Yeah. I mean, aren't we expecting that? That the ultimate goal, really, of that political sphere is to create gridlock? So that we all become unhappy in our cars, so that we don't drive our earth-killing cars.
Yeah.
So, what did you do this last weekend?
I did a cruise, 350 miles. It was awesome.
Okay, so.
Only one backup we got stuck in.
So you got state bridges need upgrades, right? You got rural roads. A lot of those are county roads and some state roads.
Mm-hmm.
And rural legislators have to go and fight for those when we talk about the politics of what gets built, right? So,
or fixed.
Here's where they prioritized it from the bill, from the transportation package in 2017. Preserving the existing system, reducing congestion, but particularly in Portland, metro area, of course.
Good luck with that.
Increasing transportation choices. So, read into
mass
that.
Transit?
Such as mass transit and bicycle paths. And public accountability and transparency.
Wait, so, they build the bicycle path, though, instead of just building bicycle paths, they take a lane of traffic, like especially in Portland. But I'm sure they're doing it here, too, in Salem, Kaiser.
They did it to High Street downtown
just
a few years ago.
They take out a lane of traffic to put the bike lane in.
The businesses along High Street aren't necessarily all in accordance of that because they take away...
Parking,
sometimes
too.
Sometimes parking
yeah.
and traffic, and they sit there and they can look out their business's window and not see anybody use the bike lane. But
right.
Yeah. That's the trade-off. And, you know, when is it overbalanced for a minority of advocates? Right.
Right. Because there's only, what, 3% that ride their bike?
So here's the, I don't know that number. Here's the part of the article I wanted everyone to pay attention to. ODOT is... creating an effort to have transparency. So they have a web face where you can see how the projects, you know, what they are in their, in the stages of development, how they are doing as far as their budget and scheduling and being on time.
What's that website?
So, let's see if I can find that. So I'm sure if you go to ODOT.
I've seen signs, though, on the road, on the side of the roads. getusthere.org.
Oh, really?
It gives you updates on construction projects.
I like it. So the American Society of Civil Engineers, the trade association, scores the states on their systems, and Oregon scored most recently a C-.
Ooh,
yeah. So it's not like we're doing great. I don't know. That's a very good question.
Right?
Maybe nobody. I don't think engineers are never satisfied. It can't be an A plus.
No.
All right. Here's the money. It was a 10-cent gasoline crash increased. It went up, you know, 4 cents in 2018. So we already hit that. We're used to paying that. And then there's three more 2-cent increments. It's happening every other year. So we'll see one at the first of next year, and then 2 years later, and then 2 years later. So a total of 10 cents coming out of the bill that was passed in 2017. Something tells me that we'll see an increase before 2024 comes out.
Yeah.
An additional increase.
Sure.
It's going to be bridges. It's going to be earthquake. It's going to be something.
Something.
It's going to be mass transit.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be high-speed rail from Eugene to Vancouver. I don't know. It's going to be something, you would think.
Would you ride that?
I would, yeah. Because, why? You know me. I don't like to drive Portland.
True.
I'm like. You know,
but if I'm bypassing Portland, yeah, I would take the high-speed rail. But I've taken the train once to Seattle, and that was a beautiful ride, by the way.
Yeah, it's great for
it. It was to pick up my car to drive back.
Or a Mariners game.
So it was fun that way.
All right, so you can come and you can go and see the accountability if a project's coming in or at or below budget, because construction costs are really, really high now. So yeah. What we experienced during the recession, where the city of Salem got so many projects done under budget, and got to do more projects, then it's very likely we won't see that with the projected projects that they thought this gas tax was going to pay for.
Gas should not be over $3 a gallon. Just saying.
So,
most of it's
taxes. And here's one of the
now,
things
right?
that relates to downtown and relates to Salem, West okay. Salem, all is, right. And we talked about this with the mayor, Center Street Bridge, where they're talking about shoring up the Center Street Bridge. The cost of about $100 million for seismic upgrades.
Would have been cheaper to build another one.
I don't know about that, but it's a big chunk of a brand new bridge, and this is just for seismic upgrades on a very old building. And they had planned on it costing $60 million, but now they think it might cost upwards of $100 million to take that old bridge and seismically upgrade it. And yet the No Bridge people thought, oh, well, we'll just add to the Center Street Bridge. We'll cantilever mm-hmm. another lane. We'll so on and so forth. But not to get off track.
No sidetracking for Brent.
All right. So, of course, I-5 projects. And you can keep, you know, what's going to happen in the Mid-Valley, what to expect. And, you know, as always, you can advocate. And you can watch for public input periods. And also, of course, contact your legislator. Right? I have a memory of Oregon. Not overly favorable. It's the first 5 years I lived in Oregon. It seemed, and maybe this is perspective and not reality, but it sure seemed like it took 5 years to add one lane to I-5 just in Salem.
Yes, it did. I remember that.
And I'm like, what is wrong with this picture? Why would it take you 5 years to do this, 5 mile span?
Of three lanes.
I'm like, wow. This is unbelievably inefficient.
Yeah.
And it was not like, I don't know, it's pavement and right-of-way, and of course some interstate, I'll give them the intersection improvements that need the alterations. But still, can't you plan a highway, contract to have it built, and go? I mean, year after year after year after year after year, count them 5 years it took to add one lane. And by the time they were done, we probably needed another lane.
That's true. We
right?
did. Yep.
Just,
we do.
I don't know how much better it's gotten. Has it?
No.
With ODOT? All right. We promised to talk about education, the cost of education, sending your kids there, the debt. Elizabeth Warren, got to bring her up too after the break, okay?
Okay.
This is Newsmakers with Brent and Dave on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers, presented by Les Schwab Tires, continues in the Capital Auto Group studios. Here's Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is brought to you by Color Tile of Salem and Sylvan Learning Center.
Welcome back, folks. This is Brent DeHart. And thank you for joining us during your noon hour here on this fabulous Willamette Valley Day.
It is fabulous, isn't it?
So, student debt, as many of you know, I have a son graduating from Oregon State University next yeah. week. Next week.
How much, how much debt are you in?
I can tell you what it cost. And we're sharing the debt, the son, parents and son.
Oh, good. Right? Okay.
Sharing the debt. There's all sorts of strategies about this. I've got a really good one that was developed by a friend of mine. I thought he was pretty darn smart about this. But folks, it costs so much to go to college. It's incredible. So you're going to Oregon State, Oregon, just state school. Assuming you don't have a a scholarship or something, you're in it for over $20,000 a year once you count in room and board.
Wow.
So I think it could easily approach, might, you know, moving forward, closer to 25 than 20.
Mm-hmm.
So we're talking about $100,000, and if you don't have the money saved, then that's debt,
mm-hmm.
right? And in some private schools, of course, we know that costs considerably more, and again, if you don't get financial aid. So it's the talk on the national scale about, you know, the student debt crisis, and part of me is just a cold-hearted jerk. And it's just like... You borrowed the money. This is the generation I come from. You borrowed the money, you pay back.
Yeah.
And you know what? Second jobs pay.
So do thirds.
Right? Third jobs pay. I mean, that's what our previous generation would do. I would not look for ways out. So in my insurance practice, and actually back when I did financial planning, people would say, well, I've got this student loan, but if I die, I don't have to pay it back. And I would just look at him and go, yeah. Yes, that's the case. They won't go after your spouse for that money, but you need to pay it back because you borrowed it.
Right.
It's not phantom money. That's somebody else's money. You borrowed that money, and they would have no compunction, no obligation whatsoever paying. I don't have to pay back if I die.
Sounds like the government.
I'm like, but what? Don't you want to pay back your obligation? You know, I didn't say that, but I thought it.
I'm sure you did. Loudly, too.
Yeah. So student debt. So my son is graduating. He's going to have over $50,000 of debt.
Yikes.
If you borrowed, let's say, let's use $80,000 to $100,000, and you wanted to pay it off within 10 years of graduation, folks, your graduate is going to look at $1,000 a month student loan debt to payment every single month for the first decade of their career. That's $1,000 that could go towards a mortgage. It's $1,000 could go towards the car or whatever. And they're going to have to try to do all of those things. You know, maybe eventually buy a house, buy a car, have a kid, get married, and doing all those things while they're shelling out until they're in their potentially mid-30s.
So their first 10 years, they're eating a lot of top ramen and not driving the car.
Yeah. And that's if, yes, and you have to hope that they've got a degree in which they can get a good paying job.
Right.
So my take, go to community college for 2 years. It's so much less expensive. Unless there's a compelling reason to go straight to a four-year college, it's a hard argument.
Depends on what you're going to do.
It does.
Because I've heard so many times people go to a four-year college, and even in their third year, they're not sure what they want to do.
Mm-hmm. Oh, well, yeah. That's crazy.
Yeah. What are you taking in college? Getting a social, you know, blah, blah, blah degree. And I'm like, what are you going to use it for? How do you apply that to real life? Let's be real here.
Well, I'm a big believer in education. I'm education junkie, information junkie. It's kind of a funny story. We're unpacking, right? Mm-hmm. And these boxes. And so I came across my school report cards that my mother had for me in elementary school, of which I have. No, that's not the good part.
C's?
And so I'm reading them. No, I was an exceptional student.
So B's then.
The point was, it was handwritten. It's in the 60s, handwritten by the teacher,
sure.
In cursive.
I remember
comments
those.
About Brent. And mm-hmm. It said, Brent is a very active or passionate learner. He's curious about everything. I didn't know that much. I didn't remember that being. It's true now. I know that. It's my disease, as I find most everything kind of fascinating.
Sure.
And apparently in second grade, I did as well. Whatever they were teaching, I was eating it up. All right. So, but in education, I like universities that require your student to graduate with a broad level of education. So I was required to take some history. I was required to take some economics. I was required to do some literature. I was certainly required to do English language and writing and so forth.
Absolutely.
And do some sciences, some social sciences, some economics. And you get this, you know, that makes a very well-rounded individual. It makes for a good person in the workforce, no matter what they go into. So I see great value in it, even if they're getting a liberal arts degree, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah, they don't have, not everyone's going to be a scientist, and not everyone's going to be an engineer, and not everyone's going to be an attorney.
I get that.
So,
but what does liberal arts apply to?
Well, that's just the thing, is how much do you, you know, so many job opportunities require a college degree.
So okay.
Many, I know many, many people that are working in fields that have nothing to do with their college degree.
That's sad.
Many, many people.
That's sad.
It's just the way, like, not necessarily. Our friend TJ Sullivan,
okay.
President of the chamber currently, owner of Huggins Insurance.
Yeah.
Community volunteer extraordinaire and occasional guest host on Newsmakers. He has a degree in planning and civic planning.
Okay.
Downtown planning. What do they call it? City planning. He has a degree in that, but he is a business owner, right?
So he contributes kind of with his degree.
And my sister had a degree in science from Portland State, degree in science, but she ended up working in vocational rehabilitation. So
well, there's some science.
Nothing wrong
with
it. You know, life throws us things. They go different directions. But you can have a four-year degree that opens doors to a number of things, even if it's not specific.
I give you that. But are you going to, are you doing anything similar to what you went to college for?
I have a business degree.
So you're running your own business
Two degrees. Actually, I have two degrees. I earned two bachelors. One is in business administration, marketing and management, and one was in theater arts.
That explains a lot about you.
You're not the first person that says that. Okay, so I have a theater arts degree, a bachelor of arts, and a bachelor of science.
Okay.
All right, so the student debt real quick. OSU's tuition has been announced. They're going to go up another 4%.
That's a lot.
Yeah, it's a pretty good jump. And what we have not seen out of the legislature this year is increases to university. That education package, it's all K-12. And there are some advocate organizations saying, hey, what about us? What about higher ed? What about community college, four-year colleges, and so forth? And can you slow the rate of growth and what it costs? We've talked about this on Newsmakers before, but what is really driving that cost that we've seen that is far, like medical expenses, is far outstripping inflation, right?
Yeah.
Educational expenses are far outstripping inflation. So I had a person pose it to me, and I thought it was compelling that when we went through this period that everybody should go through college, and if they can't afford it, we should be able to get them loans, government-backed loans, government-guaranteed loans, all of these, the big push to get everybody to college, no matter what, even if they don't have any money, and we'll get these loans.
Mm-hmm.
So it became easier for people to borrow the money. And, well, then what happens? There's more demand at colleges. There's more demand for their product because more people can go now. They've enabled a higher percentage of people to go. So people are enrolling in colleges. Enrollment is strong. And what can you do when demand for your product? It doesn't matter if it's a Twinkie or a Porsche.
You if raise demand, the price.
Prices go up.
Yeah.
Right? Expensive. They build new buildings are expensive, and they buy more professors and they're expensive, and more administration is expensive, and all of these things because life is good because we're got all this demand for our enrollment.
Isn't this how the housing crisis happened?
It's funny you should say that. It is how that happened. Yeah. It is. It's kind of the same where they've created more additional somewhat bolstered demand, right? And then what happened on the flip side? Oh, they went to college, but maybe they really shouldn't have gone. And now they're $100,000 in debt.
And no job.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so now we need Elizabeth Warren to, I think it's Elizabeth Warren says, well, I want to tax the super rich and use their money to pay off America's state debt.
Wow. Sounds like Bernie Sanders.
Yeah, doesn't it? It's not like out Sandersing. Bernie, isn't it? Yeah, out Bernieing Bernie.
Yeah, how do you do that?
I just don't understand how you get a whole crowd of people and it's like, yes, let's take people's money and let's give it to these people. It's just like, wow. And why is it their crisis to fix? How is it a crisis? It's really only a crisis for someone who's trying to make that payment. It's not a federal government crisis.
No.
I don't see our society collapsing under the weight of that. It's like, okay, I can see you want to help them out, guarantee some things, but it's not the government's job to pay off their student loans.
No.
They're the ones that decided to go to college. They didn't have to go to college. To me, it's just like, all right, so I drive a Chevy, and if I choose to buy a Cadillac, I choose to buy, you know, I buy American, so I can't say something else or, you know, but if I bought a super luxury car and I got kind of upside down on it, I wouldn't expect the government to pay it off. So why, if I'm buying a college, I'm buying a college education, why should the government have any role in saving me from my decision?
Like if you bought that car you couldn't afford, it gets repoed. they should come back and take your doctorate or whatever.
Maybe they should just learn the life lesson of what it costs.
Yeah.
Let's do the math, folks. What does it cost to not work for 4 or 5 years? What does it cost?
Take a second or third job.
Yeah.
Pay it off.
All right. OSU going up 4%. Student loans, huge. They are huge.
Yeah.
I don't want to discount that. I mean, $1,000 for a 23-year-old just starting a job.
That's a lot.
That is a lot of money unless they stretch it out. And I have seen plenty, my share of people who paid for law school through loans, and they were still paying well into their 40s.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. We're going to take a break. We're going to come back. You're listening to Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKN. Salem's listening.
This is Lynn Benton Tractors Newsmakers with Brent and Dave, presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Now, let's go back to the Capital Auto Group studios on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.
This segment of Newsmakers is proudly brought to you by Hamblin's Nursery. You know, Brent, the hour really flies by when you're having fun.
Are you having a good time today?
For some reason, I just can't wait to get outside, too.
In other words, gets the show over with. Yeah. I'm going to take a walk. Hey, welcome back, folks. I am Brent DeHart, and this is Dave Bourne, and we're here at KYKN right here in the Mid-Willamette Valley. We talk about things kind of all over the board like we are today.
Yeah,
a little bit of state government and our representation, a little bit about infrastructure in the Mid-Valley and in Oregon and taxation related to it. Now we're going to kind of segue into some things happening with the local, some local job market and local downtown. A couple of things to finish up our hour here on a Monday. And we mentioned this last week, but just in a mention about Amazon now gearing up hiring finally.
Right.
They're hiring now for hopefully opening their fulfillment center, known to everybody else as a distribution center, but for fulfillment center in Mill Creek Industrial Area, Mill Creek Business Center, I think it's called, over there off Cordon Road. Up to 1,000 people they think they'll hire. They're hiring managers. They're hiring you know, laborers, people can do a forklift, all sorts of things, fill orders. So,
sure.
But where it comes into play is this and how it intersects with the local job market. $15 an hour plus benefits, right?
That's pretty good.
Quick look on the website, Amazon's employee website. Anybody can look it up. But basically, $15 an hour, they're going to have disability insurance, short and long-term disability insurance. You're going to have health insurance. You're going to have a 401k. So I know a young lady. She's 23 years old. She's working in the trades, and she makes she just recently went from $13 to $14 an hour.
Wow.
So she could be lured away by Amazon by working inside, not in the trades, not physical work.
Right.
Make $15 an hour, plus have a 401k,
and benefits,
health insurance,
yeah,
for these young people. That, I mean, you're making $14 an hour. It is kind of difficult to make it.
Well, not to mention, how about restaurants and fast food places?
Yeah. So this is going to make, and watch out, folks. And so what I'm saying with Amazon, and if you're working right now and you're making less than $15 an hour, it's going to be a consideration for a lot of people.
Sure.
And employers are afraid that they're going to lose their employment base and maybe even some of the collective knowledge in-house all at once in big chunks at any rate.
Do you think so?
So you have food manufacturing. Somebody might do it just for change, right? And a lot of these companies are companies with small margins. So if you're working in manufacturing, you're probably already making a decent hourly wage and maybe benefits as well. But if you're working in food processing, if you're working in retail, retail does not pay well. If you're working behind the clerk, behind the store at a downtown department store, that's not paying that well. Anyway, there's going to be a lot of demand for this, so we're going to want to watch this and see how Amazon does it, luring 1,000 people away from someone else or away from the unemployment ranks. Right?
there'd be a good chance to lower that unemployment rate.
By the way, the 401k is this, I preach this all the time. I've done it for some of my son's friends, is help them understand the power of letting your company help you fund your retirement.
Right.
It's not rich. I mean, I see things that are rich out there in terms of how much companies put into their employees' retirement, right? We have a manufacturer in town that does extraordinary work. I mean, the best I've seen, and hired right here in town. Amazon, you can find this online as well, so I'm not telling any tales out of school, but basically, if you're putting in 4% of your pay, they're going to match 2.
Okay.
So that's a 2% raise. That is, you're making this, plus you're making 2 extra percent, but it's an incentivization to save. So you run into somebody that's not saving the 4% off the bat, that's a big mistake, because you're always going to find a way to spend it, folks. The very first paycheck, you have to defer that 4%, or better yet, 6% or 8%. And in Amazon's case, you know, they're putting more money into wages than some other companies, but that's not an extraordinarily rich 401k offering.
No.
I've seen companies that match up to 5%, or they'll match, if you do 10, they'll do 7.5.
Wow, that's a lot.
That is huge.
That's huge.
Can you imagine? You're setting aside 10% of pay, and your company's putting 7.5% of your gross pay in. Suddenly, you're saving 17.5% of your gross pay, and those people will do well when it comes time to retiring and not relying on Social Security.
Yeah, because who knows if that's going to be around.
All right, really quickly, we'll probably have to carry this over into tomorrow, the next day. By the way, tomorrow we're going to have a city councilor on. We're going to have Jim Lewis is going to be here from West Salem, Ward 8. So that'll be great. We'll talk about some transportation infrastructure over there. And also, a couple things happening downtown. And the Urban Renewal Agency, we've talked about more money coming into urban renewal downtown and how that money is increasing as the city is paying off the debt from building the convention center. $750,000 grants are on the docket. One of them has already been fleshed out and vented, and the staff is going to recommend they be approved to build micro apartments at the old McMahon's site. Folks, if you've been in town, you're familiar with the McMahon site that burned down in, my goodness, what
how
year
micro?
Was that?
How micro?
It's intended for people who are living an urban lifestyle that not necessarily, it's not going to be have 2 cars, that people who want the, I'm going to live downtown and walk. So one studio apartments, one bedroom apartments. Koz Development, K-O-Z, has applied for the grant. I know they're trying to hit 150 units, 270 square feet. That's not big.
No, that's a bedroom.
But they're going to price it at about $850 a month as a target. So that would be huge, though. More people living downtown can afford to live downtown and work downtown.
Sure.
And the other one, of course, is Union Gospel, who is moving and applying for another grant. To $750,000 to help them in that. And that's going to require an exception, folks, because they're a nonprofit and they're typically not eligible for these grants. All right, folks, that's it for today. I hope we filled your brain a little bit, and we'll see you again tomorrow, and we'll talk to Councilor Jim Lewis. Thanks for being a newsmaker. This is Brent DeHart for Dave Bourne on 1430 KYKM.
See you tomorrow.
This has been Lynn Benton Tractor's Newsmakers with Brent DeHart and Dave Bourne. Presented by Les Schwab Tires and sponsored in part by Furbish, a salvage place, and Kennedy Tax Solutions. Live, local talk that matters to you from the Capital Auto Group studios exclusively on 1430 KYKN. Salem is listening.